Welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, June 16, 2020. I'm your reader, Nancy, and here's the first story. Hopes dry up for 2020 Dubuque pool season. The City Council votes to keep municipal pools closed for the remainder of the year amid lingering virus fears, by Thomas J. Barton of the Telegraph Herald staff. Dubuque's municipal swimming pools will not open this summer. City Council members on Monday voted 6-1 to keep Flora and Sutton pools closed amid concerns related to the COVID-19 pandemic. Ultimately, safety has to come before convenience, said Councilmember Laura Roussel. With so many risks, I can't support opening the pools up. I recognize a lot of families look forward to it, and I encourage families to take advantage of other programming the Dubuque Leisure Services will be offering. I feel the risks outweigh the benefits. Councilmember Brett Shaw cast the lone vote against the move. I look at the amenities the city offers, and I view the public pools as being among the most critical, he said. Swimming itself is a critical life skill in a river town. Beyond that, we still need places to break away and skip the heat or at least cool down. We should open both pools, even if just for a month. City Manager Mike Van Milligan also touted the benefits of such a move. While opening the pools creates concerns about additional exposures to COVID-19 and it will increase city costs, the benefit is that the pools provide an affordable outdoor entertainment option, he said. In Iowa, COVID-19 deaths and hospitalizations, COVID-19 cases, deaths and hospitalizations continue to trend down. There have been 20 new confirmed cases in Dubuque County over the past week. Even though most restrictions have been lifted, the pandemic continues, said City Public Health Specialist Mary Rose Corrigan. She added, just because things are opening up doesn't mean it's over. We don't know how the lifting of restrictions will affect our cases, and we may be seeing that just in the past week because the first restrictions began to be lifted a couple of weeks ago. We know that the incubation period, so to speak, for COVID-19 can be up to 14 days after you're exposed before you start to show symptoms. We know that these things have waves, Corrigan continued. We have not ended the first wave yet. Governor Kim Reynolds on Wednesday announced pools can't reopen fully as long as reasonable measures are implemented to ensure social distancing, increased hygiene practices, and other health measures to lower the risk of transmission of COVID-19. City officials have said that if the pools opened, attendance would have to be limited to 150 people at a time at Flora Pool and 100 at a time at Sutton Pool. Under normal circumstances, attendance can top 1,800 people combined at the two pools. Water slides, high dives, lockers, and play equipment also would have been closed, and lounge chairs and picnic tables would have been removed, according to Dubuque Leisure Services Manager Marie Ware. But even with limited admission, enforcing social distancing within the pools would not be manageable, she said. It is not feasible for a lifeguard to continuously scan the pool surface, to also take time keeping people apart for social distancing, she wrote in a report presented to City Council members. While health officials were less concerned about transmission of the virus via pool water than airborne transmission, the concern is being able to maintain physical distancing, Corrigan said. There's just a lot of varying factors that, any way you look at it, it's going to require more vigilance by the staff to monitor, enforce, and make sure the public health guidance is adhered to, she said. Council members also cited financial considerations for keeping the pools closed. Council member David Resnick and Mayor Roy Buell said it makes little financial sense to reopen the pools for 1 month at a time when city department heads are preparing scenarios to cut 10, 20, or 30% of more of their budgets for the fiscal year beginning July 1. City officials are bracing for an estimated $11.9 million revenue loss in the soon-to-begin fiscal year due to the pandemic. Ware said it would take about 3 or 4 weeks to fill the pools, hire lifeguards, and complete training. She said if the pools opened, the goal would be to retain enough lifeguards to keep one or both open through August 14, when Dubuque Community Schools students are scheduled to resume classes. They would remain open to August 23rd at the latest. It's clear opening the pools this summer doesn't make much sense, either health-wise or money-wise, Resnick said. No one likes this. At least 25 Iowa communities have chosen to keep their pools closed for the summer, Ware said. In the Telegraph Herald coverage area, cities such as Galena have gone that route, while communities including Cascade are opening their pools. In our second story today, pandemic prompts shelter shift. Dubuque Humane Society utilizes foster homes for pets awaiting adoption. By Elizabeth Kelsey. Jennifer Hannaford's kids had begged for a puppy for years, but it took a pandemic to finally grant their wish. With everything being on hold, we had lots of extra time on our hands, said Hannaford of Dubuque. Quarantine just kind of felt like it was the perfect time, where we didn't have as many life distractions as normal and more time to focus on a pet. The Hannafords weren't alone. Pet adoptions have skyrocketed nationwide since March, and the tri-state area has been no exception. Shirley Schultes, president of the Jackson County, Iowa Humane Society, said there has been a definite increase in adoptions since COVID-19 hit. I think people knew that they were going to be home for a long period of time, and that's a great time to have new pets introduced to their household. They can train them and they can get them set up on a certain routine, she said. Bree Ickhoff, Dubuque Regional Humane Society Director of Operations, agreed that the pandemic prompted an overwhelming response from citizens interested in adopting. In addition to the lifestyle difference brought on by quarantine, she also cited the emotional support a pet can provide as a key motivator for the increase. A lot of people haven't left their homes for any measurable amount of time, so having that pet, that companionship is definitely a reason why people would be looking to bring a pet into their homes right now, Ickhoff said. Even for those who weren't quite ready to adopt, COVID-19 offered another opportunity to welcome a furry friend. In March, as business closures loomed on the horizon, the Dubuque facility followed the lead of shelters nationwide and moved many of their on-site animals into foster homes. We weren't really sure what the future was going to bring, Ickhoff said. A lot of what everybody was hearing was, you may not have staff able to come into work. We also didn't know if our business was going to be shut down, to what extent would we even be able to have animals in the building. The sudden demand for foster homes exceeded most shelters' current lists. Luckily, the same factors that led to increases in adoptions also created an abundance of willing first-time foster homes. I was just trying to find something to do with my time, and I thought, what better way to help out little lives who don't have anyone to help them, said Ashlyn Hobble of Epworth, Iowa. Hobble had never fostered before, but willingly took in a litter of kittens from the Dubuque shelter. So did Anna Hudak of Dubuque. It's always been a life goal for me to be able to foster animals, and the pandemic escalated the speed in which I was going to be ready for that, she said. The Hannafords fostered their new puppy, Cooper, before deciding to adopt him. I thought it would be a good quarantine project for the kids and would make for a good test case scenario, Hannaford said. The kids could really prove that they were up for the challenge and they were going to take responsibility and care for the dog. The shift to housing animals in foster homes rather than on site might be the most lasting effect of the pandemic for the shelter industry. According to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, before the pandemic, around 25% of animals at Wisconsin Humane Society were housed with foster families until they were adopted. Now it is 75%, and shelter officials are pondering whether that should be a more permanent change. There's been talk of whether it's a good idea to push towards having most of our animals in foster care, Ickhoff said. Shelters around the country are kind of changing, or at least considering, different ways to utilize foster and foster-to-adopt programs. The Jackson County Humane Society did not move many animals into foster homes during the pandemic because their high adoption rate made it unnecessary, according to Schultes. But she hopes that shelters who use that option see positive results from it. I'm hoping that most of the fosters will just adopt the animal that they have, so that after the animal has been in the home environment for a while, that it doesn't have the traumatic experience of having to go back to a kennel at the shelter, she said. That's what's happened with the Hannafords, and Jennifer Hannaford, who was once the holdout in the family pet discussions, is grateful that COVID-19 brought the six-month-old canine into their lives. I think our lives will maybe slow down a little bit more in a good way because we have Cooper, she said. I think we'll spend a little more time at home as a family. Even if not all of the COVID-19 foster stories end like the Hannafords, Eckhoff is hopeful that the experience will at least change some people's perspective on their temporary four-legged pets. A lot of people that weren't necessarily interested in having a pet before, that companionship has encouraged some people to realize that they really do enjoy having a pet, and that may turn them into more of a pet-friendly home because they've had that opportunity that maybe they wouldn't have pursued in the past. And before sharing the last of this morning's front page stories, I do have a correction. It reads, the Iowa Department of Transportation plans to do deck overlays on the eastbound and westbound bridges on U.S. 20 over Iowa Highway 136 in Dyersville in fiscal 2024, a story Saturday on page 5A provided an incorrect location for the bridges, and the Telegraph Herald regrets the error. So that work won't take place until fiscal year 2024 in Dyersville, on the east and westbound bridges on U.S. 20 over Iowa Highway 136. And now to our final story on the front page. Diamond Joe cutting up to 270 jobs. Dubuque Casino's parent company informs local officials that as much as 60% of its workforce will be eliminated. This is by Jeff Montgomery of the Telegraph Herald staff. A Dubuque casino recently indicated that more than 100 employees, and potentially as many as 270, will be permanently laid off in the next month. Diamond Joe Casino's parent company, Boyd Gaming Corporation, sent a letter to Mayor Roy Buell indicating that 25 to 60% of workers at the Dubuque facility would have their positions eliminated as the company deals with the business impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. The layoffs would be announced during the first 2 weeks of July, the notice stated. The letter did not specify the specific number of expected layoffs, nor would company officials pinpoint a precise figure. Greater Dubuque Development Corporation's website indicates that the Diamond Joe employs 450 workers in Dubuque. Given the percentages outlined by Board Gaming, that means 112 to 270 workers could be permanently laid off. The company's correspondence to the city included the information about 292 Diamond Joe employees who could be affected by the permanent job reductions. We're trying to be as transparent as we can with our team members, said Board Gaming spokesman Dave Strau on Monday, but we cannot determine exactly how many team members will be laid off and how many will be called back to work. The letter to city officials was dated May 22nd and issued in conjunction with a formal notice to Iowa Workforce Development on that same date. A copy of the letter was included in documents for Monday night's Dubuque City Council meeting. The letter also stated, quote, for some team members who are not laid off, we now reasonably expect the current furlough may last longer than 6 months from the date it began. Stroh emphasized that businesses' conditions have improved since that letter was issued. Diamond Joe reopened June 1, albeit with restrictions that promote social distancing. We were dealing with much higher levels of uncertainty than we are dealing with today, he said. The property is only open 19 hours per day rather than its typical 24. Moreover, amenities like the buffet and the Mississippi Moon Bar Entertainment venue do remain closed, Stroh said. We have been able to get back open, but have been operating under significant restrictions, he said. Some amenities are still closed, and it is difficult to predict how long it will take to return to normal levels. Rick Dickinson, president and CEO of the Greater Dubuque Development Corporation, said the hospitality, entertainment, and gaming industries were among the first and hardest hit in the area. He expects a strong recovery eventually, but acknowledged casinos face lingering uncertainty for the foreseeable future. It's complicated, he said. The industry was not just impacted by the directive of the governor to close and the conditions for reopening. Their success is also subject to the attitude of consumers and when they feel safe to come back. In mid-March, when the spread of COVID-19 first prompted casino closures, the two gambling facilities in Dubuque collectively employed nearly 800 people. Q Casino and Hotel had 350 employees, according to CEO Jesus Aviles. He said Monday that he hopes none of them will lose their jobs. "We don't plan to lay off anybody permanently," he said, even though he acknowledged that about 50 of the workers there have not returned to their jobs. Aviles said the casino has not yet called back restaurant workers, and about half of the table game workers have not returned to work. Aviles emphasized that the situation surrounding COVID-19 remains very fluid, and continued restrictions or dampened customer demand could force the property to implement permanent layoffs. For now, though, he has been encouraged by the number of customers returning to the venue. "All of the people who have come back are very excited to be here, he said. Amy White, marketing director at Casino Queen Marquette in Marquette, Iowa, said via email that the casino does not anticipate any layoffs, and we have several full and part-time positions open in varying departments. Disruptions to the gambling industry have not been limited to the Dubuque area. Boyd Gaming properties in both Illinois and Pennsylvania have not yet reopened due to government restrictions. Meanwhile, some of the properties in Nevada remain shuttered due to a lack of demand. The company's other Iowa casino, located in Northwood, has reopened. However, Boyd Gaming officials have notified state leaders that more than 100 employees there could be permanently laid off. Overall, Strauss said that 20 of the company's 29 gaming properties are now open. "We are pleased with the response we have had so far across the country," he said, "but we know this is going to be a very long process." And in other COVID-19 news, Dubuque County reports COVID-19 death and 3 new cases. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Monday's developments included: 3 additional COVID-19 cases in Dubuque County were confirmed between 5 p.m. Sunday and 5 p.m. on Monday. The county's total was 387 at the latter time, the 15th highest in the state. From 5 p.m. on Monday, June 8, to the same time on Monday, June 15, the county recorded 20 additional cases, which is an average of less than 3 per day. An additional related death in Dubuque County was reported between 5 p.m. Sunday and 5 p.m. on Monday. The county's total now is 22, the 8th highest in the state. The number of people diagnosed with coronavirus at Dubuque Specialty Care who have recovered jumped during the 24-hour span from 14 to 21. In all, 51 cases have been reported there. It is one of 2 long-term care outbreaks in the Iowa portion of the Telegraph Herald coverage area. As of Monday night, Edgewood Convalescent Home still had 10 cases, with 2 recovered. Statewide, 156 new cases were reported in that time span of 5 p.m. Sunday to 5 p.m. on Monday, pushing the total to 24,082. 6 additional related deaths were reported, so the total of that number rose to 658. In Wisconsin, 174 new confirmed cases were reported on Monday, pushing the state's total to 22,932. 2 additional related deaths were added to the state's official count, and that number now stands at 694. No new cases were reported Monday in Crawford, Grant, Iowa, or Lafayette counties in Wisconsin, but public health officials there continue to advise residents to be cautious of the coronavirus and also of related scams. The Grant County Health Department reminded residents that they continue to do contact tracing, which involves reaching out to the contacts of people who are diagnosed with coronavirus to try and stem further spread of COVID-19. While the department will reach out to people in those situations, They do not make recorded message calls or robocalls to you, Grant County Health Department officials. Will not ask for your Social Security number, your bank account, or your credit card numbers. And that's in reference to scams that have popped up in connection with the public health emergency. The Lafayette County Health Department on Monday shared a post from La Crosse County Health Department in response to the question, "What happens if I am COVID-19 positive and don't know who I have been around?" The public alert lists 6 bars and a beach and asked people, and this would have been from La Crosse County, and listed 6 bars and a beach and asked people who had visited those areas in a 3-day span earlier this month to contact the department because they might have been exposed to COVID-19. And in Illinois, 473 new cases and 19 additional related deaths were reported on Monday. That pushed the state's total to 133,016 cases and 6,326 deaths. 2 additional new cases were reported in Joe Davies County, so that county's total now stands at 36, while the number of recovered inched up to 31. And in a story from Manchester, Iowa, Manchester Company files Chapter 11. Company says there are no immediate plans to close Exide Technologies. This was reported by John Cruz of the Telegraph Herald staff from Manchester, Iowa. The future of a major manufacturing facility in Manchester is uncertain after its parent company filed for bankruptcy and officials submitted mass layoff paperwork with the state. However, there are no imminent plans to close Exide Technologies in Manchester, despite those developments, a company spokeswoman told the Telegraph Herald. The plant employs about 300 people. "We are planning to operate our business as usual and intend for all roles and responsibilities to remain the same," spokeswoman Melissa Floyd said in an email statement. "We do not know whether all of the company's businesses will be sold or what the ultimate buyer's plans for the business will be." Exide Technologies specializes in producing battery technology. It filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy last month, and the company's restructuring plan involves finding a buyer of its operations in North America, according to a press release. The company also filed a notice with the state of Iowa, as required by the Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act, indicating that the Manchester plant would close. The state's mass layoff log lists the plant as, quote, closing, with 301 employees affected and a layoff date of July 21. But Floyd said the company currently intends to keep the facility open, though the possibility remains that it could close in the future. The WARN Act filing was required because the facility could possibly be shut down if a new buyer is not found or if the new owners decide themselves to close the plant. As such, we are required to send out WARN letters to all employees who work at the company locations with over 50 employees, she said. Exide is the second largest employer in Delaware County, behind only the Regional Medical Center in Manchester. Donna Boss, executive director of the Delaware County Economic Development, said the closure of the plant would be devastating to the county. "If it were to actually happen, it would be a terrible hit to our economy," she said. "I'm extremely hopeful that they will find a new buyer." In the press release announcing the bankruptcy filing, the company stated that its recent actions were an attempt to restore the company's liquidity, which had deteriorated further as a result of the unprecedented global health and economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. It also said Exide was actively engaged with a number of potential strategic and financial buyers. Days later, the company announced that it was approved by the U.S. Bankruptcy Court to continue daily operations, and then the company had secured $40 million in debtor-in-possession financing. The next bankruptcy court hearing for the company is scheduled for Thursday, June 18. And we have 2 letters to the editor that have been published today. The headline for the first reads, "Protests, inevitable result of dehumanizing a group of people." This was submitted by Thomas Boxleiter, Kirkwood Street, Dubuque. "White lives matter. When was the last time you heard that phrase? Never, you say? Why is that? I have a theory. You've never heard that phrase because there has never been a need to say it. It has been too obvious to express. It has been assumed. Meanwhile, the idea of Black Lives Mattering must be said because our history, since before there was a United States, have said just the opposite. The only way that Black lives have mattered has been as a commodity, a threat, and a target. Today's protests are the inevitable result of dehumanizing and suppressing a group of people with the clear intent of allowing another group to maintain power and privilege. In the long history of our world, situations like this have led to revolution and the collapse of once great civilizations. Unless we want to allow our culture to continue to slide towards collapse, we need to make a change. We need to live the words of our Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal. Let's make it so. And in our second letter, the headline reads, Lincoln's Words Resonate Today. This was submitted by Don Blummel, Deerwood Circle, Dubuque. In the late 1800s, Abraham Lincoln wrote, quote, America will never be destroyed from the outside. If we falter and lose our freedoms, it will be because we have destroyed ourselves, close quote. Looks like it could happen. And in an announcement that also appears here on the editorial page, this is from the editorial staff of the Telegraph Herald, it references a student journalist award. One of our former Telegraph Herald interns had a pretty outstanding achievement recently, and the editors wanted to give a shout-out to Katina Zenz. A 2016 graduate of Dubuque Senior High School, Katina shot photos for us last summer and spent her senior year at the University of Iowa as creative director at the Daily Iowan. And this publication recently was named Best All-Around Daily Student Newspaper by the Society of Professional Journalists. Now, Katina has been awarded a National Photography Award through the 60th Annual William Randolph Hearst Foundation's Journalism Awards Program. The Hearst Championships are the culmination of the 2019-2020 Journalism Awards Program, which were held in 104 accredited undergraduate journalism programs. Some 29 finalists, winners from among the 14 monthly competitions, participated in the championships. Katina earned second place in the National Photojournalism Championship, earning a $7,500 scholarship. Katina's dad, Rennie Zenz, a TH copy editor who has been with our company for 30 years, couldn't be prouder. Congratulations, Katina. Your future is bright as a flashbulb, which she's probably never heard of. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, June 16, 2020. You're listening on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now let's turn to today's obituaries. Rachel A. Funston, Galena, Illinois. Rachel Audra Funston, age 47, of Galena, Illinois, died at home surrounded by her family on Saturday, June 13, 2020. In accordance with state and federal guidance on gatherings during the COVID-19 pandemic, the family will not be having services at this time. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Furlong Funeral Chapel in Galena is assisting the family, and cremation rites will be accorded. Rachel was born September 20, 1972 in Cuba City, Wisconsin, the daughter of Tom and Diane Bunyer Barch. Rachel attended the Galena school system and graduated from Chapel Hill High School in North Carolina. She was united in marriage to Joseph Joe Funston on April 20, 1998 in Galena. Rachel held a variety of jobs inside and outside of the home. She was an animal and human rights supporter and was extremely passionate about what she believed in. She will be fondly remembered as a kind-hearted and compassionate person who would do anything for anyone. Rachel was an electronics whiz and an online shopper extraordinaire, always providing her expertise to family and friends. Her hobbies included crafting, reading, gardening, listening to music, and watching movies. She especially enjoyed watching Star Wars with her son. Rachel loved and spoiled her many pets. A memorial fund has been established in Rachel's name at the DuPaco Community Credit Union, 11375 Oldenburg Lane, Galena, Illinois, 61036. The family wishes to extend a special thank you to Drs. Gregory Vendigo, Medical Associates Oncology Team, the Galena VFW Post 2665, the Hospice of Dubuque, and the many friends and families who have reached out to help during this difficult time. Your kindness and compassion will never be forgotten. Online condolences may be left at www.furlongfuneralchapel.com. Alfred P. Ritter, Cascade, Iowa. Alfred P. Ritter, or Ritter, age 95, of Cascade, Iowa, passed away on Sunday, June 14, 2020, at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. The visitation for Alfred will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. on Wednesday, June 17, 2020, at the Reef Funeral Home in Cascade, Iowa. During this time, due to the unprecedented COVID-19, social distancing requirements will be strictly enforced. A distance of 6 feet between each person, and in addition, everyone must wear a mask. Anyone interested in sending memorials may send them to the Reef Funeral Home, attention Alfred Ritter family, P.O. Box 430, Cascade, Iowa, 52033. A mass of Christian burial for Alfred will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, June 17, 2020, at St. Martin's Catholic Church in Cascade. The Reverend Douglas Lockie will officiate. Burial will be held in Calvary Cemetery in Cascade with full military honors afforded by the Cascade American Legion Post 528. Alfred was born October 2, 1924 in Cascade, the son of Peter J. and Caroline B. Lena Bertling, writer. He received his education from St. Mary's High School in Cascade and Loras College in Dubuque. He was a veteran, having served in the United States Army during World War II. After serving in the Army, he came back and farmed in the rural Cascade area for many years. Alfred was known for being a very kind and humble man. He truly enjoyed farming, and when he wasn't farming, you could find him in the company of friends enjoying a good card game. He was a member of St. Matthias Parish in Cascade. Alfred was also a member of the Cascade American Legion Post 528. The family would like to give a special thank you to the staff at Riverbend Retirement Community and the nurses and doctors at Mercy One Hospital for all the care and support they gave to Alfred. Online condolences may be sent to the family at www.reifffuneralhomeinc.com. Sharon A. Broschhaus, Stockton, Illinois. Sharon A. Vanderhaden Broschhaus, age 75, passed away on Sunday, June 14, 2020, at FHN Hospital in Freeport. She was born October 11, 1944, in Freeport, Illinois, to Lloyd and Myrtle Carpenter Vanderhaden. She married Danny B. Broschhaus on April 29, 1961, at the Wesley United Methodist Church in Stockton, Illinois. Sharon was a member and secretary for the Wesley United Methodist Church. She also worked for the Citizens Bank for 40 years, retiring in 2017. A founding member of the Apple River Canyon chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution, she was a founding member of the Apple River Canyon chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution and was elected the Outstanding Younger Junior for the DAR. She was a den mother for the Stockton Boy Scouts of America and a winner of the Stockton High School Freshman Cup. Funeral services will be private. A visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, June 18, 2020, at the Lehman Funeral Home in Lena, Illinois, where social distancing will be practiced. Burial will be at Mooresville Cemetery in Stockton, Illinois. Pastor Paul Fritz will officiate the services. A memorial has been established in her memory, and condolences may be sent to the family at www.leamonfh.com. Margaret A. Cobble, Margaret Ann Cobble, age 78, of Dubuque, died June 12, 2020. Arrangements are pending at Engelhoff, Siegert & Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 Kennedy Road in Dubuque. Cecilia Gavin, Cascade, Iowa. Cecilia Gavin, age 94, of Cascade, formerly of Maquoketa, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, June 13, 2020, at the Shady Rest Care Center in Cascade. Her funeral mass will be held on Thursday, June 17, at 11 a.m. at the Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Maquoketa, with a visitation prior to her service starting at 10 a.m. Burial will be at the Sacred Heart Cemetery in Maquoketa. Dawson Funeral Services is caring for her family at this time. Carol M. Beshen. Carol M. Revelle Beshen, age 57, of Dubuque, died June 13, 2020. To celebrate Carol's life, private family services will be held with the Reverend Stephen J. Rozanke officiating. Entombment will be in the mausoleum at Mount Calvary Cemetery. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, is in charge of arrangements. Patricia A. Sturry, Earlville, Iowa. Patricia Patty A. Sturry, age 68, of Earlville, died June 13, 2020. Arrangements are pending at the Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service. Daniel J. Lidberg, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Daniel J. Lidberg, age 60, of Prairie du Chien, died June 13, 2020. Services will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, June 18, at the Bible Baptist Church in Prairie du Chien. Daniel J. McElmo, Mission Hills, California. Daniel J. McElmo, age 75, of Mission Hills, California, died June 10, 2020, at the Northridge Hospital, Northridge, California. Services will be at 10 a.m. Friday, June 19, 2020, at the Pierce Brothers Valley Oaks Griffin Mortuary, West Lake Village, California. Severna Cowell, McGregor, Iowa. Severna Cowell, age 86, of McGregor, Iowa, passed away on Sunday, June 14, 2020. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, June 19, 2020, at the Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Services in McGregor. There will also be a one-hour visitation before services at the church on Saturday. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 20th, at the First Lutheran Church in McGregor, Iowa. Burial will follow at the First Lutheran Cemetery, also in McGregor. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, state and federal guidance on gatherings will be followed. We ask that everyone wears a face mask and follow social distancing guidelines. Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of McGregor, Iowa, is assisting the family. James A. Baker. James Jim A. Baker, age 92, of Dubuque, died June 15, 2020. Arrangements are pending at the Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service. And in funeral service announcements, most funeral homes and churches are practicing social distancing guidelines recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Please contact specific locations for more information. Services as follows. At St. Mary's Catholic Church, Guttenberg, Iowa. The visitation from 8:30 to 9:45 a.m. Friday at the church. Christopher J. Herrig, Dubuque. The services will be held at noon Thursday, June 18, at Nativity Church. The celebration of life will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. on Thursday at Happy's Place. Vernon F. Leick, Dubuque, and that's L-E-I-C-K, of Dubuque. Services, 11 a.m. Wednesday, June 17, at Holy Spirit Parish, Holy Ghost Church, with the visitation after 10 a.m. Wednesday at the church. Griffon T. Metcalf, of Dubuque. The burial ceremony, 10:30 a.m. today, Natural Path Sanctuary, 2299 Spring Rose Road, Verona, Wisconsin. Janet E. Myers, McGregor, Iowa. The services, 11 a.m. Wednesday, June 17, at St. Paul Lutheran Church in McGregor, with the visitation from 9 to 11 a.m. Wednesday at the church. Austin W. Parrott, P-A-R-R-O-T-T, of Elizabeth, Illinois. Graveside services to be held at 11:30 a.m. today at the Zion Presbyterian Cemetery, Shapville, Illinois. And we have one birth to announce today. On Monday, June 15th, 2020, Lisa and Luke Hemmen of Piasta, Iowa, welcomed a boy at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. And we have some high school baseball and softball news to read today. The headline reads, Prep Sports Return. Summer sports begin in Iowa 3 months after the coronavirus shutdown. And in baseball, Western Dubuque 5 and Dubuque Wallert 1. The Bobcats win the opener over the Eagles. Perrinode delivers for Western Dubuque's opening win over Wallert after unexpected injury to star, by Jim Leitner. From Farley, Iowa, K.C. Perrinode expected to pitch in relief Monday night, but he didn't think it would be in the second inning. The Western Dubuque senior right-hander struck out 5 and scattered 4 hits in 6 innings in a 5-1 season-opening victory over Dubuque Wallert at Farley Park. Perrinode came on when All-Stater Calvin Harris experienced discomfort in his pitching elbow after facing 4 batters. He was pulled for precautionary reasons and will be evaluated today. I was able to get loose pretty quick, and the defense did a great job behind me with the 3 double plays, Perrinode said. It's not too big of a challenge if you get ground balls and your defense plays like it did tonight. But you come to expect great defense when you play for Casey Bryant at Western Dubuque. And in high school softball, Cascade 10, Bellevue nothing in 5 innings. Cougars shut out Comets in debut. Freshman anchors Cascade to Mercy Rule victory in sports return, by Tim O'Neill. From Cascade, Iowa, Devin Simon wasn't sure she was going to get to play her freshman softball season. When it finally started a month later than originally expected, Simon and her Cascade teammates took full advantage. Simon went 3-for-3 with 2 doubles and scored 3 runs and struck out 5 in her first career varsity start as the Cougars romped to a 10-0 5-inning victory over Bellevue in Monday's season opener at Cascade High School. And in other announcements, local teams make first poll. If the preseason Iowa rankings are any indication, Dubuque County is in for a pretty robust high school baseball season. Western Dubuque, Dubuque Wallert, and Dyersville Beckman were each ranked in the top 10, and Dubuque Hempstead received votes in Iowa's first prep baseball season of baseball poll of the season that was released on Monday. And here are some other scores. Cascade 17, Bellevue 6 in 6 innings. Edgewood-Colesburg played a doubleheader. Edgewood-Colesburg 6, Bellevue-Marquette 5 in the first game, and Edgewood-Colesburg 14, Bellevue-Marquette 4 in the second game. Western Dubuque 4 and Solon 3. Springville 6, Maquoketa Valley 5. And in another doubleheader, North Fayette Valley and Clayton Ridge Central. In the first game, North Fayette Valley 12, Clayton Ridge Central 5. In the second game, North Fayette Valley 9, Clayton Ridge Central 3. And in prep softball, Mount Vernon and Dyersville Beckman played doubleheader. And in the first game, Mount Vernon 13, Dyersville Beckman nothing. In the second game, Mount Vernon 11, Dyersville Beckman 1. In another game, West Delaware 8 and Solon 1. And in the final softball game announced here, Springville 6, Maquoketa Valley 2. And turning to other announcements and articles, Dubuque youths earn writing honors. 2 Dubuque children recently received recognition from the Iowa Reading Association. Brecon Fitzpatrick, a first grader at Resurrection Catholic Elementary School, won first place in the short story and poem category of the association's Creative Writing Contest 2020 for his entry titled Time Crisis. Riley Martin, A second grader at the Table Mound Elementary School placed first in the same category for her entry, titled The Sweet Family. Winners received a letter of congratulations and a certificate. Normally, first place winners from each K-12 grade level are recognized at the Iowa Reading Association's June conference in Ames. However, due to the health concerns surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic, the event has been canceled. For more information, you can visit www.iowareading.org. And in an announcement about Father's Day, River Museum to offer free admission to dads. The National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium, located in the Port of Dubuque, will celebrate Father's Day with free admission for fathers, as long as you purchase one youth admission. The offer is available from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Father's Day, Sunday, June 21, and includes access to the museum's permanent exhibits and aquariums, as well as the William M. Black dredge boat and the museum's robot zoo. To pre-purchase tickets and save $2 per ticket, or for more information, you can visit rivermuseum.com/visit. And from Maquoketa, Iowa, Maquoketa's Onward cancels an upcoming show. Onward Fine Arts Center has canceled the Maggie May Show, set for July 11th due to ongoing concerns surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic. Ticket holders can contact the center at 563-652-9815 for a ticket exchange to any upcoming show. The venue's next concert, Joseph Hall's Elvis Rock and Roll Remember Show, is slated for 7 p.m. Saturday, June 27th. And in an article concerning Northeast Iowa Community College, they are embarking on a $22.5 million Piasta campus renovation. Officials hope the project will be complete by the fall of 2022. This was written by Annie Mill of the Telegraph Herald staff. Construction is underway in Piasta at Northeast Iowa Community College's campus as the school launches into the first phase of its $22.5 million renovation project. NICC held a virtual groundbreaking ceremony to discuss details of the project and thank residents for making the renovation possible by passing a $39 million bond levy in 2018. When we went out in September of 2018 and asked our voters to invest in our future, not just NICC, but our future, it came back with an 84% approval rate, we said. That's unheard of, and it really touched us deeply. Planned work includes new spaces for faculty, student services, and campus dining, updated classrooms, a new main entrance, a hallway with classrooms connecting the main building and information technology building, new steel siding for the main building, and a renovated conference center. Last month, NICC picked Larson Construction Company of Independence as the lead architect. Travis Schwartz, senior project manager for Larson Construction, said construction on the north stairwell began on June 1, and it's off to a great start. Rhonda Siebert, NICC's Associate Vice President for Operations, said the school already completed other projects funded by the bond levy, including the $1.9 million renovation to the school's Town Clock Business Center in Dubuque. Prior to the groundbreaking ceremony, the NICC's Board of Trustees met and discussed the college's plan to reopen to the public on August 20. "We hope to, but we are not at the step yet," we said. "That means there needs to be more opening of the community, and we do not have a spike in cases. It's easy to bring people back again, but we need to balance the safety." The Piasta campus closed to the public on March 23rd. "We laid out a four-step plan for reopening the college." He said currently the Piasta campus is on the second step, as it is closed to the public, allows for limited face-to-face interactions, and mandates high levels of cleaning. "I hope that in another few weeks we can migrate to step three," he said. Step four of the plan would allow for face-to-face classes, faculty, staff, and students to return to campus, and low levels of cleaning. "In order for the campus to reopen in August," we said, "instructors are being asked to find ways to restructure their classrooms to make social distancing possible. They know what makes sense for their classes, he said, noting that a welding class is different from a history class. In Cascade, Iowa, the annual Hometown Days set. Organizers of Cascade Hometown Days recently announced that they will host the 2020 event as planned. The fifth annual offering will take place Friday, August 14 through Sunday, August 16. More event details will be released as they become available, according to an announcement. For updates, you can visit facebook.com/Cascade Hometown Days. And in Dyersville, Field of Dreams adds a field cam. The Field of Dreams movie site in Dyersville, through a partnership with EarthCam, has added a live field cam. The camera looks out onto the ball field from the porch of the Field of Dreams farmhouse, with views changing regularly. In times like these, we need something to instill in us with a reminder of all that was good and that could be again, officials said on the Field of Dreams movie site Facebook page. We are excited to be able to give fans the opportunity to virtually visit our magical movie site. And in another article, Western Dubuque Board opts for earlier start and a longer school year, from Farley, Iowa. Western Dubuque Community School Board members on Monday unanimously approved a plan that extends the next school year. I'm happy with the approved calendar, said Superintendent Rick Kolpitz. It provides our students with an additional 11 days of instruction next year. Students now will start school August 13 rather than August 24, and the last day is pushed back from May 27 to June 2nd. Kolpitz said these additional days will allow teachers to make up instruction time lost when Iowa school buildings closed in mid-March due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The additional days will cost the district approximately $25,000 per day to pay hourly employees, but those costs could have been much higher. Kolpitz said Western Dubuque Education Association agreed to provide the district additional days of service at no cost, a $500,000 savings for the school district. And from Southwest Wisconsin, economic development funding is available. New revolving loan funds are available for people seeking to start or grow businesses in southwestern Wisconsin, according to a press release. The Southwestern Wisconsin Business Development Fund provides low-interest loans to business owners in Grant, Greene, Iowa, Lafayette, and Richland counties. It is set to receive $500,000, which will be available for distribution in August, in addition to $50,000 that already is available. For more information, you can contact Kate Kozol at kozol@swwrpc.org, or you can call 608-342-1751. And that does it for today's reading of the Telegraph Herald in Dubuque for June 16, 2020. I'm your reader, Nancy. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, theiowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thanks for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. Shortly after modern humans arrived in Europe, the Neanderthals disappeared, and scientists think we had something to do with it. Neanderthals, or their direct ancestors, migrated out of Africa and into the Middle East and Europe around 250,000 years ago. Soon, they were well adapted to the environment. Large eyes helped them see in the longer nights and darker winters. Stout bodies helped them retain heat and handle large prey, and provided space for the large liver and kidneys needed for a diet heavy in protein. Their brains were as big as ours, but spent processing power on their greater visual and motor abilities. This may not have allowed them to develop higher communication or conceptual thinking to match ours, which may have been their downfall. Modern humans arrived on the scene 45,000 years ago, less physically adapted, but more mentally adaptable. We had cooperative hunting methods superior to the Neanderthals, allowing us to outcompete them for food, and perhaps reducing the large herbivore populations that they depended on. We also had superior tools and weapons. When there were conflicts between the groups, as there have been among tribes throughout history, our superior technology probably allowed us to prevail. But we weren't only fighting. There must have been considerable interbreeding, since we can find 1-3% of the Neanderthal genome in modern man. Which means the Neanderthals never completely disappeared. A little bit of them is alive in us today. I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.